Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
I feel so moved by our kinhin today. It was the first time that I know that there was not instructions. And it just felt like there was such this smoothness of just walking together. Just doing the next thing. Walking slowly, paying attention, then walking a little swifter and paying attention. There's something incredibly moving to me about that. Chodo and I spent the day today visiting patients at the Haven, which is a hospice inpatient unit. And then we went up and to see an old favorite patient at another hospice, at the residence, it's called, on the Upper East Side. And there's just something so particular about spending time in those spaces where there's no veneer or no pretending. Everyone's dying. Or as Ronnie, one of our friends there, said, you know, it feels like I've lost more people than the Vietnam War. He's been there for 2 years in the hospice. He said, just people are dying all the time. Imagine that in hospice. But it's actually just happening all the time. But people like Ronnie are aware that it's happening. And what he said is that Chodo asked him about how is that for him? And he said, it's just heartbreaking each time. And imagine just allowing yourself to feel heartbroken each time. When something sad happens, you just feel sad. Instead of feeling like you have to do something. Instead of like trying to be clever about something, just being where you are. It's kind of like in that kinhin, that walking meditation, just like, oh, just this. Just the next thing. And that's why we need each other, I think. Because left to our own, we think it's about something else. Like getting something, or getting better, or feeling better. Feeling happy. It's a popular one. Feeling happy all the time. As if anyone feels that. I know I need all of you, and my teacher, because it reminds me again and again of actually what's important. And it's not most of the things that I have concerns about. It's so amazing how one of the uniting things that we have are following and feeding things that are not that helpful. We're actually are completely out of our control. The other day I was talking with a Sangha member who is also dying. And he's like, well, I think that, you know, maybe moving to a place where there's assisted suicide might be a good idea. And I said, well, why is that such a good idea? And he said, well, then I'd be in control. He's like, that's the funny thing, isn't it? As if there is control. So there's a koan that I love very much from a book called The Book of Equanimity, one of the koan collections that some students are working on. And it's the first case in that book, or there's 100 stories in this book. And of course, they're all designed to help you see where you're stuck. Not in the rational, but actually just in the embodied experience. And they all start in this book with attention with an exclamation point. Pay attention. One day, the world-honored one ascends the platform and took his seat. Manjushri struck the sounding post and said, when you realize the Dharma King's Dharma, the Dharma King's Dharma is just as it is. At that point, the world-honored one descended from the platform and the talk was over. So the world-honored one is the Buddha. Some person that might have lived between the 6th and 4th century BCE. So he gets up to talk, and Manjushri, who we have an image of over there, and the lion, the embodiment of wisdom that we all have. So we just have these external images just to remind us, like, yep. We all have that. We all have wisdom. Even if you think you don't. So he says, when you realize the Dharma King is the Buddha, when you realize the Dharma King's Dharma, the Buddha's Dharma, then the Dharma King's Dharma is just as it is. And at that, the world-honored one, the Buddha, got down and went away. What more could the Buddha say? When we realize things are just as they are, what more is there to say? Ronnie today was talking about his life. And how, you know, he had spent many, I can talk about his name because he signed a release. He'd been on a ventilator many times in his illness. And he's really clear that no more. No more ventilator. And I said, do your friends and family know? And he said, absolutely. But he said what was so amazing was the light this morning. Were you aware of the light this morning? Were you aware of the light this morning? Right now, in this room? Things just as they are. I love the afternoon light over there. So beautiful. And that statue and hitting the fern and the shadows. When you realize things are just as they are, what more is there to say? But how do we become completely present to things as they are without being kind of, as I always think of as precious moments, about like, oh, it's so special, that light, you know, without like adding a whole veneer or gilding even that. A woman I visited with today, she was only spoke Spanish. At the end of our conversation, she's like, in Spanish, said, you speak very well. Which was a nice surprise. She was really interested in me really seeing all the burns all over her body from radiation. Really how important it was just to be seen as with all of these burns, just looking at them. And I asked her about any fears that she said. She said, I have no fears that live in my heart. Just occasional ones that live in my head. But I know they're not true. Imagine that. Feeling no fears in your heart. How would that change your life? All kinds of words have been used to explain this just as it is. The Zen school, which is thought to be the school outside of words and letters, has more writing. People trying to explain this very subtle and profound point of things just as they are. And yet, none are needed. Thinking about how she was a very tiny woman, and just her turning her, she wanted me to see like every bit. And how rarely we take time to really look at our own bodies, everyone's aging body. Even if you think you're not aging. Just letting everything be as it is. And she didn't need me to do anything, but just see. And I think of how rarely we actually take time to really see each other. To really take one another in. Someone last night asked me a question about like, well, in New York City, we're so busy and we have so much, you know, commuting or too much phones. We have those smartphones, which actually, does anybody even call anyone on them? But I don't know. We like to think of all these reasons why we don't pay attention and don't realize that this life is just the adventure that it is, waiting for another adventure. When just the sorrow where we are might be the place to enter, or the joy, or the sorrow and the joy together. What would it be like to live not adding anything extra? Adding your story and opinions to everything, of how hard it is for you. I met so many people today who could easily throw a great pity party. And all of them were so engaged. Filled with pain in their bodies. And yet so courageously present. And how amazing. How inspiring. I didn't meet one person really in their heads. But what would it be like to live like that and not wait until you have 6 months to live? What would it be like to say things that might be difficult to say and just say them? What would it like to be receive things that are difficult to say and just receive them from someone else towards you? To me, this is intimacy. Not pretending. Things just as they are. Letting it all hang out now. Even the idea of becoming something like better or even peaceful is fooling oneself. Enter wherever we are is intimacy and not so popular. I was talking to a woman who sits here on a Sunday sitter, and she was saying, you know, it's really specific what goes on here. Because you're really asking, and the practice is asking us to like give up everything. All of our limited ideas about who we are and who others are. Loosening the grip of that. Because basically the practice is about freedom. It's not about comfort. Or cozy corners, as much as we would like a cozy corner. A wonderful poet named Cold Mountain says, high, high the summit peak, boundless the world to sight. No one knows I am here. Lone moon in the freezing stream. In the stream, where's the moon? The moon's always in the sky. I write this poem, and yet in this poem, there is no Zen. He's describing Zen, of course. High, high the summit peak. Boundless the world to sight. What would it be like to walk around for even an hour? Say, after this. Feeling, taking on, boundless the world to sight. How would that change your attitude? If you could just take it on, boundlessness. There are boundless things to see. This is the beauty of the practice, to keep opening up that which is so closed. And I know for myself, like this woman I learned from today, it's often because of fear in my own heart, a contractedness. But what would it be like to not live that way? As an identity. And to practice this boundless world to sight.
New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care is currently offering our Commit to Sit program, a 90-day self-commitment to sit and practice every day. This program is generously sponsored by Gaiam. See zencare.org for details.